Everybody here in the back?
Yes.
Okay.
Just a reminder that I'll be doing the one-day workshop at Trinity Church on June 2nd from 10 to 4. It's called Growing Pains and Growing Up, and it's on how your early life affects your adult relationships. So if you're interested, the flyers are in the back. This is a fundraiser for the Community Counseling Center. So we're on our topic of synchronicity, which means basically the meaningful coincidences that happen in the course of life. What is the meaning of me? Whatever helps you move along on your path, and especially what surprises you to move you out of whatever is constricting your imagination or your choices, so that you start to see whole new possibilities. And I'll just read a couple of sentences I noticed in the introduction that kind of start us off. Our life as designed by our conscious mind might not include all the twists and turns that lead to the release of our creative energy or the clash of forces that make us truly extraordinary. Perhaps all that is happening in life is going just as we intended. Then suddenly, we meet someone, or find out something, or have an accident, or hit bottom, and our world spins out of control in a new direction that ultimately makes all the difference. Those unexpected events beyond our control are the forces of synchronicity that make us more than what we are so far and who we were always meant to be. So that's our topic, and it's really a sacred topic to talk about, because under it is the archetype of grace, this force in our lives that can't be explained by anything that we can do with our conscious mind or with the ego, and certainly is more than any effort we might put in. Something else seems to come into play that helps us move along, and it's something totally out of our control. And Jung, even in one of his definitions of God, says God is that which happens suddenly and beyond our understanding and beyond any force in us that's able to make it happen. So when something happens that's beyond what you yourself have created, you know you're in sacred territory. And this time we're on chapters 2 and 3 of our book, The Power of Coincidence, How Life Shows Us What We Need to Know. And then for next week, if you can read 4 and 5. And by the way, the reading is really important because it enriches the understanding that we have of this topic. Because what I do is just go into some high points, but the chapters give you the full view of things. So I'd like to begin with that wonderful quotation on the bottom of page 25. This is from Margaret Mahler. She's our object relations psychiatrist. There is an innate given . So there's something inside of us that is already moving toward our fulfillment. So she calls it an innate, nate in Latin means birth, so in us from birth, an innate thrust. There's a movement, it's a given, hence it's in everybody. It's a thrust in the direction of our individuation, of our becoming who we really are. And when you look back at all the various connections that you've had, you have to ask yourself, which ones opened me to be my full self, and which ones tried to shut me down and keep me enclosed in what they thought was best for me? And so you ask this question about your mother, your father, your church, your school, your relationships. And of course, now that we're adults, we realize, well, we have to do this for ourselves. We can't expect other people to do it for us. But there certainly are events and relationships. This will be part of our topic today. The events and relationships that came along that helped us individuate, that showed us more about who we really are. And when that happens, since it's coming to us from beyond ourselves, and it's not conjured, it's not manufactured by us, synchronicity is often at work. The archetype of grace. What is grace? The special help that comes to us and moves us in the direction of this individuation. What is this individuation? It's the complete fulfillment of ourselves so that we show ourselves at last with all the talents and gifts that we came in with. And we often talk about how scared we are of our demons, but imagine sometime that we might even be more scared of our angels, of the positive side in us. I try to understand this. Why would we be so afraid of our real fulfillment as individuals? And this poem by Emily Dickinson gives us an answer that really helps us. We never know how high we are till we are asked to rise. And then, if we be true to plan, our stature touch the skies. The heroism we recite would be a common thing did not ourselves the cubits warp for fear to be a king. So there it is. It's the fear of your own power. For fear to be a king, king, symbol of power. So we warp ourselves because one of our biggest fears is the fear of coming into our own power. To be able to say no to the forces that keep trying to make us what they need us to be. So after a while, this can become the criterion for any relationship or organization that you're going to hook up with. Is this one that is going to show me where my power is and empower me? Or is this about keeping me obedient? Everybody falls? Christine?
It just occurs to me, I've always been so sad at the way fundamentalists tend to limit God, make God small. And maybe that's why, because since we know that we're made in God's image, we can't aspire to be as big as God really is.
Okay, good point. Yes.
Might I ask, how does fear of how I may be perceived interfere with moving into what you speak of?
Well, when you Jung uses the word persona. This is the Greek word for mask, but in Latin it means to sound through. So you're You only want to look like what you think will be pleasing to others. That's your persona. And everybody has this persona, and we need it, of course, in the ordinary course of the day, because we don't want to look too crazy to the outside world. But when we're tied to this persona and start to believe that this is who we really are, then we get into big trouble. Who we really are will probably never be known because it's a mystery. This in Greek means secret. It's a secret even from us to know our full stature as humans. This is why the story of Christ and the story of Buddha are so important. They came along to show us what humans could be. They could be fully enlightened, they could have healing powers and bring about reconciliation. They could have purposes that go way beyond the ambitions of the ordinary ego. They could free themselves from greed, hate, and ignorance, what in Buddhism are called the three poisons. They could free themselves from the seven deadly sins, what in Christianity are called the vices. They could live from a loving and wise place. So when we look at them, we get a clue about the mystery of who we can be. And of course, each person has his own signature way of showing this. So St. Francis shows his response to the fullness of the Christ life in a different way from St. Dominic. So each person shows it in its own way. But these religious images were actually meant to help us peer into, without ever fully understanding, peer into the mystery of who we are. They weren't meant to be gods up above that we're supposed to adore not see as mirrors of the highest potentials within ourselves. We didn't get that part of the message. We got the message of you keep adoring, but we didn't get the message of you imitate. A good example is in this practice in Buddhism, you honor the Buddha of compassion, the one that has the 12 arms that reach out to the world outside, and he reaches out to each of the 12 houses of the zodiac. So he loves the Capricorns in their special way, he loves the Libras in their special way, and so forth. So first you bring flowers and incense and you bow down, you prostrate yourself to this image of the Buddha of compassion, Avalokiteshvara is the name, and that's only the first part of the practice. The second part of the practice is to acknowledge that this image is actually the best picture we have of what we are meant to look like. Oh, I'm supposed to reach out to all 12 houses of the zodiac, to all the people, in other words, all the people on the planet. That's part two of the practice, that realization. Part three of the practice is to leave the temple and go out into the world and show the love and the compassion that Buddha represents. So you move from adoration to representation. We were supposed to do that in all of our religious backgrounds. We just didn't hear as much about that. So this is why the Mass ends with the words, Ite missa est, go. The Mass is complete, bring the Mass into the world. That's the concept. What you saw here is what you bring into the world around you. Yes.
I'm the youngest of five children, and that might be the reason I'm like this, but I've always had a problem in spiritual training or, you know, as a priest, in seminary, what have you, about being told what to do or to follow. The idea of following somebody has always been uncomfortable for me, and I think you're revealing why to me.
Yes, it's not about the following, it's about, oh, so that's what I actually look like. Mm-hmm. Well, we were taught mostly to be obedient.
Mm-hmm. And I'm very skeptical.
That was the main version.
Yeah. I'm very skeptical about somebody giving spiritual direction to me.
Yeah, really. Same idea.
I just thought I'd share that.
As opposed to being, it should be more like an accompaniment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Than a direction.
Yeah.
First of all, could that be that which family established?
Yes, yes, your family has a big...
So when Jesus went through in Nazareth, and his limitation in Nazareth was like family?
Our family often dictates what our persona will be like. So, let's take a look at this... topic of how we meet up with people in the course of life. Now I'm on page 26. How we meet future partners is usually synchronicity at work in our lives. We meet someone, and you're familiar with the song, in some enchanted evening, you know, you see someone across the crowded room. So we meet someone, and the excitement, you just fall in love with someone, let's say, then the excitement has to do with a desire that seems now to be fulfilled, and maybe is fulfilled in many ways. But as the relationship continues and you move out of the romantic part of it, which is normal, you want to move from the romantic part into more direct confrontation with the other, we find out some interesting things. We find out that the partner resembles one of our parents, for instance. And in the ways that we become upset with our partner, we recall how we were upset by our parents in childhood, but we couldn't speak up and argue with them, but we certainly can argue with our partner.
Oh, yeah.
So you see the... Well, you can try anyway. So you can see how the obvious synchronicity that you chose just the person, it seems like you chose just the person who would show you what was still unresolved from childhood. So here's the past that's coming right back up into the present. Secondly, this partner starts to confront you and your ego-centeredness, your self-centeredness, and shows you that you're not as generously loving as you make yourself out to be. So, and since, remember the... all of this is based on the wonderful statement by Margaret Mahler that there's an innate given that continually moves us toward the true fulfillment of ourselves, which is to work out what's unresolved so that we can clear the past away and enter into our full adult stature with all our creativity, with all our gifts, with recognition of our light and dark side. So since something inside us wants that to happen, it must have been involved in how we made the original choice. Something was happening that moved us toward the person who would be just right for us so that we could see what's unresolved and work it through, confront our ego, and at the same time, learn the most important thing in life, which is how to love really. How do you actually love? It may not be like the love you saw between your parents. So you're going to find this out, which is a wonderful thing to discover. So you see how something more must have been at work than just your own choice. Hence the phrase, some enchanted evening, really does fit, because there's an enchantment about this. And the only way that you wouldn't benefit from this whole relationship experience is if you turned everything into blame. If you said, no, it's not about my parents, you're wrong. Now it's not my ego, you're wrong. See what I mean? Then you're never going to get to this wonderful place of respecting the innate given that wants you to become your full self. Because you're going to put all your accent on blaming the other person. This is why blame is so toxic in a relationship. Because every time you're blaming, then you're not looking at your own stuff that is waiting to be taken care of. Everybody follow? Mm-hmm. I won't spend a lot of time on it because we have so many other things to talk about. But any questions about this part? So we might say, I'm on the top of 27. We might say that every experience of falling in love or entering an intimate relationship is an example of synchronicity, since we inevitably meet just the people who teach us what we need to learn about life, love, and ourselves. We meet the people on whom we can transfer the needs and expectations from childhood. We bond with the person who will show us what we have not worked through from our past, and who can even help us complete our emotional unfinished business if we're willing to do the work for it to happen. When we look back on our relationships, this is what we regret. Oh, instead of doing all that blaming and arguing, I could have been learning about what I had to work on. That's the waste of time, not the years you spent in the relationship. Every client that comes into me that's been going through a divorce says, oh, I'm so sorry I wasted so many years with him or her. The waste was not in the years with him or her. The waste was in the fact that you didn't use the relationship for what it could have been to you. What could it have been? It could have pointed you into yourself and into the work that you need to do in order to clear yourself enough so that you could take leave of your persona and ego and live from the fuller version of who you are. A version that may never be revealed. Imagine being put into the coffin when no one has yet seen who you really are. Okay. Any other questions about this? Kind of a minor point. Yes, I... I'll repeat it.
It's fear.
Yes. Very good point. She's saying, one of the main reasons that we don't do this kind of work is fear of going into it. So we tend to deny that we really needed to do any work.
Arrogance, too.
Yes. And, of course, the fear is the ego's first name. So it fits.
So can it also be the child in us that is the other partner stronger, and the child is fearful of authority?
Yes. Fearful of, Jenny's making a good point, that part of the fear is from this child part that doesn't want to defy the authority. Okay, so let me go on to, paragraph on 28, this will be the second paragraph. Everyone and every event in life's drama is part of a metaphor of our own journey. The issue from an old relationship may not be how bad he was, but how much I needed to learn. Most of us keep meeting partners who show us exactly where our work is, and our wounds, the wounds we receive in relationships, are openings into our missing life. What part of me is missing? Often the only way a lost piece of ourselves or of our history comes back to us is through another person. But as Jenny and I have said, that the unknown is scary. So just the right people and events come along to help us go there. Don't be afraid. Move right into it, in other words. And this is the synchronicity. The only mistake we make is hanging on to some people too long or too briefly, because we take them as literally themselves, hence we blame them, and so forth, instead of they're themselves and metaphorical forces who have come to boost us or chide us. If only we had the humility to let that be okay. Oh, yes, I'm allowed to learn from somebody. I don't know at all. So, in addition to meeting the people who show us our path, we also meet up with the experiences, the events that open or awaken us. So, it can happen through reading a book that's life-changing. It can happen because of a terrible mistake you made that moves you in a whole new direction. It could happen because of a loss that made room for new possibilities. It could happen from a depression, an opportunity that was meant for somebody else but came your way, a plan that failed, an accident that disabled you. I don't know if I have this example in the book, but in the late 1930s, this journalist living in Atlanta, Georgia, she was thrown from her horse, and so she couldn't get to work. She had, in those days, you couldn't work very well at home. So anyway, she couldn't get to work, and she was told by the doctor that she would have to just stay home and recuperate for many months. Well, she knew that this would be boring, so she set herself to the task of writing a novel, which she had never done before, because she was a journalist. She'd only written news stories and so forth. And, of course, she produced Gone with the Wind. That's an example of an accident that she thought was so negative, but actually it released her full potential as a writer, so she could produce something that has been so important to the world. Everybody follow? So that's an example of how it works. So we could say also that sometimes we don't notice where the doors are that we can walk through, and so events occur and people come along who show us exactly what can work or what can be an opening for us. So let me just use one example. Maybe you're the kind of a person who does this, or you certainly know someone who does this. You will say, collect something. I use the example in here of shells because I collect unusual shells. And you might be somebody who collects figurines of turtles, elephants, butterflies, whatever. But all through your life, you've had like a fascination with a certain image that's very pleasing to you. So you start collecting things that represent this. Makes sense. Well, that could be an example of synchronicity, because something in your psyche linked to that image, because that image is not meant to be literally itself, but is symbolic of a special way in which you can open to the mystery of life or of yourself. Everybody's following me? Mm-hmm. And we didn't think of it this way. We just thought, oh, I just have an interest in swans. Mm-hmm. So I like figurines of swans. I draw into pictures of swans. I like to go see Swan Lake. But you wouldn't be drawn to that specific image unless it had a deeper meaning than you're giving it credit for. So that's why it's good to meditate sometime on whatever your particular image is and just see what comes through. Let it talk to you. Talk back to it. Pretend you are this swan, and what would you say? We're going to find it very fascinating. This is what Jung calls the active imagination. So you use your imagination to bring out from literal, tangible things, a meaning that must be there, because otherwise you wouldn't be so attracted to it. So there's something about what you're drawn to that that is meant to help you. And I have this wonderful quotation by Dostoevsky. He says, "It must have lain hidden in my soul, though I knew nothing of it, and it rose suddenly to my memory when it was needed." So sometimes it works that way. There's certain something that's consoling, and in a moment of terrible distress, it comes back to you, and it helps you get through something. Whatever they call it, religious images certainly fit with this.
Would that be something like golf?
Could be. Can be anything. If you could raise your hand when you have a question. Somebody else have a question? Hi, Macklin.
I'm going to comment to that when you mentioned I was thinking about the ugly duckling.
Yes.
And the swan.
I always think of that too.
And mm-hmm. I think that we can be worried about a transformation that comes from some other source than trying to do it ourselves.
Yes. Very good point. Okay, I'm glad we had a chance to talk about that. Now, sometimes the synchronicities have what looks to us like a very negative connotation, but remember that in the inner world, there is no positive and negative. It's all one. There's no dualism whatsoever. There's no male and female. There's no time and place. So that's why you can have a dream about your childhood as if it were real now. Because in the unconscious, childhood is not in the past. It's still in you right now. And so is the future. So let's just take a simple example of one of these negative ones. This would be on page 32, where I'm talking about the dark side. There is a negative synchronicity in world events that bring destruction because of a dangerous or tragic coincidence in time, place, or decision. And I used this example last time, but now I can give the actual facts. For example, the iceberg that destroyed the Titanic began to form 15,000 years ago. Imagine that. That's when it began to form, the iceberg. In 1909, the same year in which the Titanic was being built, while the Titanic was being built, this iceberg split off from Greenland and began to move toward the North Atlantic. Began moving the same year the boat was being built. Okay. And it traveled as far south as the latitude of New York City. Kept moving along through the water. April 14, 1912, it crossed paths with the Titanic, resulting in the deaths of 1,500 passengers. The captain had decided to speed up the voyage. And if the ship had kept it to its original schedule, it would not have collided with the iceberg that was steadily moving toward no particular destination. It was just moving through the water and hit the Titanic. So, because of a particular decision that someone made, combined to something happening in nature, a catastrophic event occurred. That's memorable for the rest of time. So sometimes what happens is tragic and negative to us, but it's still synchronicity.
Steve, just this week they talked about this incident. And there's two more synchronistic events here, one being the weather.
Oh, okay.
The moon that was very unique that happened at this particular time.
Oh, okay. So it all comes together. Okay, so what we're basically saying is that synchronicities can occur in positive or negative directions from our point of view. And all that's happening is something is afoot and something is moving that's bigger than ourselves and sweeps us up in it. And once we realize this, we're much more humble about how much control our ego really has over what occurs.
Just briefly, we like to say God did it a lot of times in our language. God took him. He was needed by God. Somebody asked me, how come my husband was killed on a motorcycle recently? How could God do that to him? And my answer was, we chose to ride motorcycles and to create vehicles that get us where we want to go at a certain speed, and there's always the possibility that there's going to be a collision. God, I don't see God as, my concept of God doesn't involve that event being caused by.
Mm-hmm.
I think this raises a whole.
Very good point.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Coincidence and God's action.
Right. It's more like it's more about the givens of life, but accidents can happen. Irene?
An immediate example of synchronicity that disaster you're talking about.
Yes.
I have a friend who's an anthropologist who has done research on a village in Mali, Africa.
Uh-huh.
Worked with them for about 12 years and helped with all the costs of concern and their daily life and education for children and that sort of thing in this village. And now in a political situation, everyone in that village who has had any association with him appears to be very dangerous because of the terrorism and some of the people too who have been working for years have been killed because of that. And this is, you know, when you were talking about the Titanic,
yes, good example, right.
So
she's saying what this person was doing to help others in Africa turned out to put them in danger.
And causing him less distress.
And causing him pain also. So I wanted to show that there's this side to it so that we wouldn't have this, you know, bunnies and butterflies concept. So we see that this is, we're in rough territory. Anything can happen. Hi, Martha. Oh, okay. Yes.
What if the 1,500 people who died get out of that situation?
Good point. He's saying the people who died in the Titanic didn't learn something that they could use for very long. Okay, one last question and then we'll take our break.
What did they learn? Well, what we learned is we found out that some died as heroes and died good deaths, and others died as, you know, cowards and bad people.
Yeah, we're always learning about each other. All right, so we'll take a short break and then we'll come back.